Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba says, "Children of immortality, remember that you are created in my image and my likeness, perfect. Live up to this image in every way, in all planes. Live like masters. Walk this earth with your heads held high, your spirits soaring, your hearts open to love, and believe in yourself and God within you. Then all will go well. Earth is but a manifestation of my being, made out of my life. Wherever you look, I am there. Wherever you walk, I am there. Whomsoever you contact, I am that person. I am in each, in all my splendor. See me everywhere. Talk to me and love me, who am in each. Then from each, I will respond and bring you into glory. You cannot see me in one place and not in another, for I fill all space. You cannot escape me or do anything in secret, for there are no secrets with me. Live, live, live in perfect accordance with my laws, and wonders will ensue. Think now, does error clog the free-flowing essence of my being through you? Ask me this moment to reveal to you your errors in the silence of your meditation. Let old memories well up in you from my subconscious in you, old patterns, old forgotten feelings and thoughts. Now plunge them into the ocean of light, burn them from the consciousness so that they may be true emblems of my being. Right now, visualize my burning flame, rising higher and higher as it burns through you. It is a flame that is cooling, cleansing and healing, that soothes the hidden sorrow and leaves you calmed and quiet. Rest in my love. Let all that you have been through in your many lives up to this day melt away in my redeeming light. Children of my being, dissolve your sorrows and fears in me. Let me efface all your karma. Come back into my consciousness, which is your true consciousness. Let your petty human self fade away right now as you come to me, who am your inner self. You are now my radiant, glorious self, no longer separate from me. Melt with me, merge with me, become me." Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. Om Sri Sai Ram, dedicating myself at his lotus feet and to his divine mission. This is a very grateful Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Sai Ram, good morning and welcome to Morning Glory on this very sacred day, the day of the Avatars Ascend, the Aradhana Day. 3 years ago, on this historic day, the Sri Sathya Sai avatar made the transition from the form to the formless infinite. As you can imagine, the ashram today is all geared up and busy to mark this occasion. We have been having special programs since last night to mark that historic moment. And thousands of devotees from all over the world and from every corner of India have descended on the Divine Valley to offer their homage to Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba on this sacred Aradhana Day. This morning too, we had a special musical presentation. I hope you heard it on the live program, the Panchakirtis in the Sai Kulwant Hall. The Kulwant Hall program has just ended moments ago, and that is why I am signing it a bit late with Morning Glory this morning, and I thank you for your understanding in this regard. We will bring you some of the highlights of the rich musical extravaganza that was offered to Bhagwan Baba this morning in the Mandir. So please continue to stay tuned to Morning Glory all the way till 12:30 this afternoon. Yeah, you heard it right. Morning Glory will go on till Prem and Arvind sign in with afternoon satsang at 12:30. Brother Raghu gets a Aradhana Day break today for his segment, Service, Love in Action, and it's a very well-deserved break, I'm sure you agree. Which reminds me, the time right now in the ashram is 10:51 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time, and today, of course, is the unforgettable 24th of April 2014, the third Aradhana Day. The current temperature outside the Prashanti Digital Studios is a balmy 33 degrees Celsius. We are expecting afternoon highs of 40 degrees and overnight lows of about 28 Celsius. And that seems to be pretty much the trend for the rest of this week. Maximum 40 to 41 Celsius, minimum in the 27 to 29 degrees range. The air is crisp and our skies are clear and bright and blue. And there is divine love blowing in the air as always. That really is the unique blessing of Prashanti Nilayam, the abode of supreme peace, where the heart is at home, the mind is at ease, and the soul, well, the soul, what can I say about the soul, is simply blissed out. Clearly, bliss is the natural state of the soul. 3 years after he left the body, today Russians, Croatians, Americans, South Africans, Australians, Zambians, who hasn't come down to attend the Aradhana Day, which is also known as the Aradhana Mahotsavam. Personally, I prefer the term Aradhana Day, as Mahotsavam is quite a tongue twister, but it has a solid meaning. Mahotsavam means the grand celebration. And the grand celebration and offering of love and devotion is going on here right now. As we speak, thousands and thousands of people from many nearby villages have gathered in the Hillview Stadium to receive new clothes and food in honor of Aradhana Day. Actually, they've stopped the traffic somewhere near Ganesha Circle, and thousands of villagers had the road to themselves to just streaming in. As I was driving to work this morning, I had to take many detours to get to the ashram, and I had to come from Chitravati Road because the Marine Drive along the Chitravati, that's the name we have just given it. I don't think it is called the Marine Drive. So, because the main road leading to Puttaparthi was packed with people who were walking all the way to Hillview Stadium, their buses were stopped near Ganesha Circle, and they were making a beeline to receive their free new clothes and food in honor of the Aradhana Day. There is also a very noticeably large population of young adults and their parents in Prashanti Nilayam right now. And the roads between outside the ashram as well as inside are really busy, especially the outside road between Super Bazaar along the Gopuram all the way to the bus stand. Can't find a place. I think the reason is that it's also admission time at the Sai University. And a lot of parents are here with the applicants who are appearing in various exams. And of course, the flower and coconut vendors outside Ganesha Gate are doing some really brisk business. What a happening place Puttaparthi has become. So far away from the rush of big cities and the chaos of small town India, yet dancing to its own divine rhythm and ecosystem. All tuned to perfection by her one glorious son, who was born Satyanarayan Raju on November 23, 1926, and who left the body as universal guide, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, on April 24, 2011. Today on Morning Glory, we will offer our Lord 3 bouquets of devotion. Apart from continuing our 2 ongoing conversations, A Tryst with Divinity with Rita and Robert Daniele, and a Fleeting Moments interview with Dina Bordoloi Barua, I have a very special treat for you. Just day before yesterday, Mr. K. Chakravarti of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust came over to the studio for an exclusive Aradhana Day interview. In this interview, Mr. Chakravarti shared what the day means to him. He touched upon the latest updates on the Central Trust and the Vidyavahini project and the role of students working in the Sai mission. This is a conversation that must not be missed. So let's take off Morning Glory with my recent interview with Mr. K. Chakravarti, trustee of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. he absolutely needs no further introduction, I'm sure. May I just remind our listeners, though, that we have in our repository a two-part exclusive with Mr. K. Chakravarti, in which he had spoken of his journey to Sai, his experiences as the secretary of the trust while Bhagwan was in the form, and the challenges before the trust after the Mahasamadhi happened. That interview was recorded on November 18, 2012 and was exceptionally well received all over the world. And you can go to our repository, access it at any time and enjoy it. But today I'm going to play his recent Aradhana Day special interview that we recorded just day before yesterday, that is on April 22, 2014. Have a listen, please. Sayonara, Mr. Chakravarti, and thank you very much for being a part of Morning Glory on the third anniversary of the Aradhana Day. Let's begin with the Aradhana Day itself and what it means to you. Is it a challenging day, emotionally that is, to get through?
Well, it must be so for all of us. With Aradhana Day, I think it's a day of remembrance and a day of dedication. Remembrance Day, because of the years of proximity to divinity with which I was blessed. A day of dedication, because it's a responsibility of all the devotees and functionaries to carry on, each according to his ability and energy, with the sacred task of preserving and promoting human values, both in personal and public life. It's a remembrance day because of the love and blessings we had all received personally and collectively when Bhagwan was with us. It's a day of dedication because of the rare opportunity given to us to look after the institutions such as super specialty hospitals, schools and university, which constitute a great legacy. The day of descent on 23rd November and the day of ascent on 24th April are holy days for all of us.
Now, what do you make of the fact that this day of ascent, it coincided with Easter? A lot of people read a lot into it. What's your take?
I haven't given much thought to that. But the fact that it happened during the Easter must have some relationship with the Father and Son.
Good one. Nice perspective. I concur. Now, after 3 decades of reporting to your boss in person, today, 3 years after Mahasamadhi, how do you connect to him when he's no longer in the form?
We do not have the physical presence of Swami Amitsas, that's true. But his presence is felt by all of us, the extent to which we let our thoughts and actions govern by the recognition of his grace. It is his grace that confers a power indefinable and inexpressible on all the devotees and functionaries in the personal and official work. But for that grace, we'd all feel enfeebled. Oftentimes, we feel that if Swami were with us in his physical world, we'll have access to have that unfailing guidance in all matters, small and big. Very soon, we gather ourselves up and shake off the despondency. We remind ourselves of Swami's assurance, "Why fear when I'm here?" And we know that here means everywhere. I think the way devotees and functionaries can feel connected is to humble ourselves and pray for his guidance, and then engage ourselves in our work, in the spirit that is his work and that His light shall guide our decisions.
You know, you speak of devotees and functionaries. Aren't the functionaries devotees first?
It's not a distinction I made. I made that in the meant that all devotees are not functionaries, but functionaries are devotees. They're a subset of the devotees.
Thank you for that clarification. Now, when you're dealing with trust matters or personal matters and you have a moment of, let's say, a little bit of confusion, do you pray actually? Are you a praying type of person? Or do you just say that, you know, things will flow? What's your style of connecting?
I think all of us are given to prayer. The way in which we pray possibly will differ. Some close their eyes, some perhaps remember their name. And sometimes you find do both, and it depends on the time. When you start your work, at least you pray to Him, Swami, take care of our work and let us do the right thing. There are moments where you pray, not for a specific thing, but in a mood of a prayerful supplicant.
I see. Now let's turn our attention to trust matters. What update can you share with the listeners of Morning Glory regarding the recent activities of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust? Because on Radio Sai, we are constantly reporting for our listeners, the general updates. You know, we are expanding, we are improving, things are moving as they always were and only bigger and better, but we don't know anything much else. It would be nice to hear it from a trustee.
Well, the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust have been the instrumentality of Bhagwan for setting up colleges which became university, hospitals which served as precursors to super speciality hospitals, drinking water projects which are so comprehensive as to supply drinking water to very large areas of the districts. At present, the Central Trust has been continuing the great work Swami had initiated and been looking after. Currently, the Central Trust is implementing a water project in Anantapur district so as to cover villages not covered earlier. The scope of the current project is to cover about 120 villages, I think to be exact 118, in the three mandals of Anantapur district on the sacred day of Mahasamadhi, 24th April, drinking water to about 50 of these 118 villages will be made available.
And this is high-quality, clean drinking water?
Absolutely, the way in which Swami had provided. This was a small part of that wide project which was left uncovered, so we have taken it up and completed. Of course, the balance of the villages, 118 minus 50, about 68 villages will get water in the next 3 months. And of course, I would like to continue saying that when you talk of the Central Trust, Swami's work and things like that, the Central Trust work is only one part of Swami's work when He was there. Swami's work went far beyond the work assigned to the Central Trust. He was gracious to permit His sacred name to be used by His devotees to set up organization both in India and overseas. A great responsibility rests with all the devotees in the years to come, so that the organization serves as an enabler for all the devotees to improve themselves through dedicated service and through such self-elevation render such service to society. Swami had continuously reminded us that Sri Satya Sai Seva organization is a spiritual and service organization. I'm not making a distinction between Central Trust and various organizations because all these things were rolled in His person. When we talk of the Central Trust, otherwise it would give only something like a legal entity to which you are confining. His work is more than Central Trust, and all of us therefore will have to really look beyond the Central Trust and look at it as a comprehensive whole and see who should be doing what. Of course, all of us must be doing something in His service. That's why I brought in the organization as I consider it to be another arm of what Swami has been using for his mission. Spiritual attitude to service, that's what renders it pure. And therefore, Swami said that it would become fit to be offered at the lotus feet of Bhagavan. Service activity rendered to society by us through Swami's organization ennobles us first, and we become therefore better instruments of Swami over a period of time. When I talk of organization, I'm not confining myself to India. Organization means all those centers abroad also, overseas. So I think every step taken by every center in every part of the world to provide such service to society will therefore constitute a step both in awakening the larger self in us and in sustaining the loving concern to all mankind which Swami showed for more than 7 decades after his divine announcement about who he is and what his mission is. He is therefore not the central trust but the entire Sai fraternity in all parts of the world that is heir to Swami's mission. His central trust as the coordinating body will rely on state trusts and state organizations in India and the councils in various countries overseas for a sustained engagement with devotees and with local communities in such a way that the spiritual attitude of the devotees strengthens service activities in the respective areas, and the goodwill of local communities encourages greater activities. The Central Trust, of course, deals with the institutions set up by Swami. Swami set up excellent institutions in the fields of education and health service. These institutions have to be supported and sustained, not for years and decades, but for centuries. How do we lay out this responsibility and this privilege? These institutions constitute a legacy, as I mentioned earlier, for the entire mankind through Sai fraternity. The Sai fraternity who gave in abundant measure their material resources, and Swami started these institutions. People who had come here in form of work, they have been here, did a lot of seva, but over a period of time, it is both human resources and material resources. And when we talk of material resources, it is the donations, etc., that really constituted the basic substance, you know, with which Swami set up all these institutions. And in a way, this is the same type of their relationship with Swami that will really govern the sustenance of these institutions. The entire Sai fraternity, I feel, have a unique relationship to Bhagwan as a person when he was there. Now that special personal relationship has to become a special relationship to institutions set up by Bhagwan.
And to future generations who haven't seen him.
That is why I said, how do we really treat this as a legacy, not for years and decades, but I said for centuries. So it's as countless people, generations have to come that way. And I think this is necessary, and this is the only way by which these institutions which Swami has left for us will be sustained. So when I look at it, I don't look at it purely from the point of view of a central trust with a local body here. After all, Swami, as you call it, I mean, Bhagwan, it's a Sahasra Pusirsha Purusha, Sahasra Sahasrapad. So which means all of us, so many thousands of hands, eyes, all of us are the things. So in a way, I think whatever has been started by him will have to be continued by all people concerned.
You speak of this macrocosmic perspective, zoom out and, you know, include everything and see the bigger picture. In this connection, may I ask you, sir, what is your take on the many other hospitals or educational institutions that are coming up in Swami's name but are not directly connected to the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust or the any of the Sai organization, the Seva organization of India?
It will be very difficult to intervene and say that thou shalt not carry Swami's name to your institute. God's name is used by so many. But amongst the devotees, when they start, we can tell them that it is better that they consider seriously, because when you take the name of the Lord, you must be able to sustain that name of the Lord. However, in the past, you know, when individual devotees were moved by considerations of having to do some service in the society, had at different points of time come and taken blessings of Swami to start a school here or start a school there. So when we really took stock of the situation as to how many institutions of that nature are there amongst the devotees who had set it up in different parts of the country, we found that there are about 99 or 100 schools bearing the name. Our concern was that if these schools bear Swami's name, they should have an acceptable quality as common standards. So some efforts have been made in the last couple of years to set up a national board of accreditation, go to schools, see their human resources, their infrastructure, and to sort of ensure that they all, at least over a period of a few years, come to some acceptable standards. And we also said that some of the schools, if they require some infrastructure support, the central trust can extend, provided, of course, they also make their own efforts and look after some extension of their infrastructure requirements. So it's a question of encouraging them to take up, you know, construction of rooms or laboratories. And to the extent that the Central Trust can, as a measure of encouragement, extend some help, we said we'll do it. I've been doing it. Most of these schools have their own management committees. They are not under any trust. There are a few schools which were sort of looked after by the state trust. Those such schools we knew. But the schools which I am talking about are those which have been set up by some private management committees. But hereafter, at least, the responsibility for monitoring its progress, for extending a helping hand, such things will have to be done also by the state trust, because it is in the area of their operations. See, for instance, Orissa may have about 17 such schools. Karnataka is about 12 schools, and Tamil Nadu is about 10, 11 schools. So some of these states have, you know, 10, 15 schools. Some may have about 3, 5 schools.
But the schools in Karnataka, for instance, some of them are outside the state trust.
No, many of them. Actually, schools which are within the state trust, we didn't recognize, I mean, we didn't think that they have to be monitored, because yes, we knew the one which is in Hyderabad or Vizag, etc. We know, I mean, or in Sri Shailam. So we know that they have been set up even when Swami was there, and the state trust have been looking after. The schools which we are concerned about are those which are started with good intentions by private management, but suffer from certain shortcomings, and which they have to overcome over a period of time by a fairly well-defined program.
I understand. Now, time, you know, they say it's the best healer and it has the power to provide us with clarity in our perspective, because hindsight is always 20/20. 3 years after the Mahasamadhi, what role do you see the Sai mission, the big mission that you speak of, playing in the history of humanity?
I mean, it will be difficult to talk in such broad, comprehensive terms. Sai mission, you know, and in the world at large.
You have a very good handle on world history.
It's true, but every step is, as I said, in the center, it's a giant step. After all, it is not only here in the Central Trust, but every institution, every center in the country brought. That's why I said it is not to be confined to the Central Trust saying that this has got a big mission.
I mean the whole family fraternity.
Yes. That is why I said Swami had set up and given a structure, let us say. And that structure will have to be kept and strengthened. Now, more activities are likely to bring in more people because people get moved by selfless activity. And people are going to, will start questioning as to what motivates them to do, what type of inspiration they draw from and from whom. Now, these are questions which I think people will ask as they see the centers functioning in every part of the country or abroad. So that is how more people are likely to participate. See, this is an organization which is spiritual, and there is no question of enrollment of persons in a mechanical way of going and then saying you join us, etc.
We don't have a pyramid scheme for recruiting people.
We don't have, because it is believed, I mean, as Swami said, that it is your own inclination to improve yourself at a spiritual level and to find, you know, people who have a similar inclination, and then collectively you feel you can do something in the local community. And what are the activities which Swami has specified? Sing the glory of God through bhajans, because that is one bonding that takes place. And then reinforce it by reaching out to the local community, do some social service, what is required. Do it in a way which, in a modest way perhaps, because most of these centers are going to have 50 people, 100, 200 people. So what can they do and in their own vicinity? But sustaining it over a period of time is what lends credibility. And to be seen by others doing some work which does not benefit them materially or otherwise, it promotes an inclination in others to participate. And beyond these two, if you look at it, he has not specified what activities you should undertake. It's not a question of raising money to do something. It's a question of doing something within the means you have. But then, there are certain specific activities and projects which can be taken. For instance, in the last few years, drinking water, not by way of comprehensive water projects, but for purification plants, etc., do not cost much, but it requires a good attitude to maintenance. That is now available. Most people, most villages feel that if they are given that facility, they will be able to look after themselves. So these are all possible with local initiatives.
And the Sri Satya Sai Village Integrated Program does a lot of work in this direction.
Wherever it is possible and wherever there is a need, it is one of those schemes or projects which they can undertake. But I think in the years to come, possibly, I mean, for health service and education at the local level, primary school, secondary school, etc., a lot of work has to be done. But then, since as an organization you cannot have too many schools, you can facilitate, but the management and other things. So what is required is to infuse the sense of selflessness or the sense of commitment to value education.
And such a models, I guess, that can be emulated.
The models which Swami had left, let us say, his own schools, they can be, if it's possible for them, that they can emulate. But what they should be doing is to promote a quality education in their own areas. Most of the villages suffer from lack of quality. It can be due to lack of rooms and facilities. It can be lack of books, lab facilities, computer facilities, or the teachers themselves not adequately trained. There can be a host of factors. Of course, in a limited way, the Sri Satya Sai Vidya Vahini program is attempting to reach out to distant areas through technology. It's a long haul, not can't be done so quickly, but technology-wise, how do you reach out to rural areas and to give them value education along with education of a conventional nature, promoting good quality teaching in mathematics, science, language skills like English language. So they are now training the teachers, getting them here or going there. It's a long process, but there's no shortcut. The idea is that if you take 10 years' time, at least that is the minimum time you require in order to have a critical mass of good teachers, it'll certainly make a good impact.
Well, you know, there's at the other end of the spectrum, there are people who believe that some of the greatest problems facing humanity include growing poverty, rising terrorism, and global warming and such issues. And the one model that can actually save mankind is the Sai model of just living, you know, practicing sealing on desires, having values-based education, healthcare delivered with so much of love and compassion. So in that sense, they feel that if this model is it continues to grow organically as Bhagwan has envisaged, it will show the way. It will connect the dots of goodwill that are going. There are many people who have many good intentions around the world, but this model has the critical mass, the ability and the grassroots level support to take it to the next level where people will look up to it as the way to go forward.
Now, whether this can be considered a model by others, I don't know. It can be possible. But what I think we need to do is, having got fairly good basis, you know, for our organization, the basis good, as Swami has really given that inspiration to the devotees to get together and do work. Now, the extent to which they can stabilize, strengthen, and allow this to grow, over a period of time, it will have its own impact. Because this is not a thing as I look at it from the point of view of doing something for the next 10 years. It's a thing which has to really go on and on. So which means that the people who are today participating should be able to inspire sufficient number of people in the local community to provide that continuity. So it is the dedication and the time that these people spend in such activities in their own areas that is going to provide the sustaining force. So if you are able to get more groups of people organize themselves and extend the area of work over a period of time, that certainly would be a great advantage. But I would think that in the next 5 years, the centers which are already working must ensure that they continue to do work and to some extent to grow, both in terms of the people who can really provide continuity and also from the point of view of enlarging their sphere of activities in that area.
Now, you speak of the need to sustain and grow further, and as we know, an organization is only as good as its human resources. Within the ashram and its allied institutions, whether it's the Sai University, the Sai schools, or the Sai hospitals, a large number of employees are actually members of the Satya Sai University and school alumni. We have over 200 men members, and I'm guessing the women's numbers might be 50 plus, between 50 to 75, who work as teachers, as administrators, as support staff, and so on, within our hospitals, universities, and schools. And these are young men and women who have chosen the most productive years of their lives and decided to stay back in Puttaparthi or in Vrindavan instead of going out and making a living outside, and dedicate their skill set to Swami's mission even after the Mahasamadhi has happened. Now, does the Central Trust have any plans to incentivize this experience for the young alumni who have made this conscious decision that this is not their second innings, this is their first innings, and this is what they want to do?
I would think that those who had chosen God and God's work when he was here, with whatever motivation they had done, will continue to do so. So I don't think in their mind they'll make a distinction between Swami being physically here or Swami not being here. Because if they were inclined to do work at the lotus feet of Bhagavan, they will continue to do so because the invisible feet are already there, are always there. If you are dedicating yourself at the lotus feet of Bhagavan, even if he's not physically present, those lotus feet are always present. So with whatever motivation they had taken up this work, I'm sure they will continue to feel the same way while choosing the work earlier to work here with Swami and his institutions. I believe that they would not have taken it up as a career. It is more like a calling. You commit yourself to doing the work which is given by Swami. Of course, there are places like university where you have a certain qualification which is necessary to be recruited as a lecturer. And there is something like a time-bound program by which he or she moves from a post of a lecturer to an associate professor or professor and things like that. Maybe in the hospital also a few of them, if they are doctors, well, junior consultants, senior consultants, etc. But it is in the structure of things. But if you take other places of work, they are not defined in that way. So it is a question of doing the same work over a period of time and continue to dedicate it to Swami. So when, if Swami had physically been with us, would it have made any difference for them? Will they continue to do the same work which has been given? If not, even now they won't have any other inclination except to serve in the way, in the place, and in such capacity as Swami had given them. But it is quite possible that as they grow in skills in these places, they may be in a position to contribute more in their own areas.
And is there any mechanism in place to provide those opportunities?
As I told you, we do not at this point of time consider it as a career. It's not as though that you move from one place and above the ladder and then there's no such structured working system. It may be there, as I told you, in a university setup because of the nature of the work. You put in 15 years and then you move. Now, in the case of teaching profession, the names may vary, but the work continues to be so. Therefore, some designation which is appropriate to years of service can be designed. But essentially the work that a person does is not going to change. You grow in your area of specialization, and that is how your quality of service is better, and you are rendering, let us say, take up this media foundation, the type of work that you people do. Well, you will become more and more professional in your approach as you go along. You might not have had a formal training, but you are learning so much on the job that maybe in the 5-10 years ahead, you will be able to make a better use of your time and talent. If you look at it, the Central Trust is a coordinating body. You know, it looks after, it provides the funds for the university, for the hospitals, etc. But that's the structure. And you have people working in Central Trust office, in Media Foundation, in Sadhana Trust. I mean, these are people working there. And the nature of work is not going to be fundamentally different. It's the same type of work they will do. But I think the attitude to that work, as I believe most of them will have, is to continue to do what they are doing. And over a period of time, they are going to improve their contribution, their skills, and they will provide a sense of stability, you know, to the organization.
What is the trust's human resource policy when it comes to recruitment? It's just a natural process?
Today, if you look at it, there are enough number of people doing the job. But should it expand, then it is up to the people who feel a sense of commitment to Swami's work. Now, what should be the proper scale of remuneration? Those are matters of detail. But fundamentally, if you want to stay in this place, it requires a certain orientation. And you don't need to be Robinson Crusoe, but you need to have a certain mental makeup of being able to stay and contribute and to be a very effective member of the organization through any activity which is now entrusted to certain special organizations. Many of us have believed that he is the manifestation of divinity. Many may believe him as great teacher. Now you take even this media foundation. And one of the things we need to really look at it is how do we really take this message of Swami to a larger number of people within the country and overseas. Of course, during his own lifetime, lots of people have been coming and drawing inspiration, support, comfort. But there are still very large sections of population in India and overseas who haven't had the chance to know him. Or they may know him casually, but not the way in which I think some of the more fortunate ones would have come and known and be touched by his divine grace. So I think it is the responsibility of an organization like the Media Foundation to really look at it and see how do we promote an awareness of Swami, his life, his teachings. Because I can't think of another person who would have spent a lifetime not only teaching us but setting up institutions. I don't think there's any other person with that type of a large number of people coming from different parts of the country, different parts of the world, with great reverence to him, towards him, with great love for him, and who believed that anything remitted to him will be solved. That's a great faith, and that's a great love. And for such a person also to be involved in setting up institutions which are sui generis. You don't find many institutions of that type. So there is adequate, let's say, work to be done by a conscious increased awareness of the people. Because we believe that it is necessary for other people to learn about what Swami is, has been, not because you want to expand the glory of God, but because we want more people to get that joy as we have been having. So, when you look at these institutions which are here and which have to really take care of these things, I believe that there will be adequate opportunities for more people to come and use their professional skills and to actively promote the cause they believe in.
And if I'm hearing you right, in a spirit of personal sadhana.
You see, I'm not saying that these people should be I mean, in such a way that they deprive themselves of anything. But this is not a work that can be done looking at it as a career. You bring to your work some talents which you have, some skills which you acquire, and use them in a cause you believe in, for one whom you believe as the protector, as a savior, as the divinity himself. If that is the attitude with which people are doing the work and will continue to do so, and if any more people are going to come, they are also going to take up this work in such a manner, I believe that things of a conventional nature would find the adequate responses from within the system.
Now, before I close, I'd like to hear from you any parting thoughts, final thoughts for the listeners of Morning Glory who are going to be listening to this interview on Thursday, which is the 24th of April, the third anniversary of the Aradhana Day.
I mean, I'm too small a person to say what they should be doing today. But I think, I feel that me, like me, they'll also be feeling in their own way a certain kinship to Swami, a certain relationship with Swami, the like of which you cannot have with anyone else. So it's a unique relationship for everyone, and there will be a joy at one level, there'll be a sadness at one level that he's not with us. But as I said, we'll pull ourselves up. We won't let our despondency in certain regard to stifle our work, because we know that that work is very close to his heart. And I think which, when he knows that we are doing, will make him very happy. So it is in that spirit, I think, all the fellow devotees would feel and act.
I can't resist but ask you this. Do you dream of him?
Perhaps I'm not a great dreamer. I'm a man, I suppose, given to simple action on a daily basis when Swami was here. So I'm a nut and bolts man. So I can't say I'm a dreamer of any type.
Not even in your sleep?
Maybe. But they don't become the bedrock of my personality or my foundation stone for claims upon others' beliefs.
Thank you for sharing your time and perspective, and thank you for being on Morning Glory.
Thank you very much.
Sairam, sir. Sairam, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, on this Aradhana Day, April the 24th, 2014. The time here in the ashram right now is 38 minutes past 11 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. You just heard a Radio Sai Aradhana Day exclusive conversation with Mr. K. Chakravarti, member of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, which we recorded 2 days ago on 22nd of April, 2014. I hope you enjoyed it. We value your feedback deeply, so please share your thoughts with us by email at listener@radiosai.org. Up next, it's time for our feature presentation. That is the conclusion of the Tryst with Divinity interview with Rita and Robert Danielli. This part was so riveting for me that I can't even begin to tell you. There is a special charm, a deep charm and conviction in what the Daniellis share of their Sai experiences in this part, because their perspectives are based on their long and steady relationship with the avatar of the Kali age, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And here then is part two of this interview for your listening pleasure. Rita, any memories, particular memories that come to mind Swami inspires you to share with our listeners?
I think our wedding is such a beautiful story. As I said earlier, I never knew if I would marry, but I always prayed that if Swami, if you wanted me to marry, that you would choose my husband. But it wasn't until years later, when I was working in the book center and volunteering my time, and I got to know Mrs. Cowan very well. And she was a very wise, wonderful human being. And she saw something very special there in Robert Danielli. And he came later, and he was volunteering in the bookstore also, but we didn't know each other. And I would work upstairs writing the orders, and he would work downstairs packing the orders. And we never talked, never knew each other's names. And Elsie, quietly on one side, she never told us what she was doing, that she was playing matchmaker, because she had the wisdom and the foresight to see something that we weren't thinking about. And I didn't think that I would be getting married, so I wasn't looking for that. And I had the opportunity to take my first trip in 1974 with Mrs. Cowan, but that was quite a unique experience, because Swami came into my life when I was quite young. I was 13, but I had to wait 6 years for my first trip. And I remember one evening I was driving to work, and I put my foot down in my car so hard I thought I put my foot through the car floor. And I said, Swami, I cannot and I will not go on another day unless I can come to see you. I must see you now. And that evening, when I got home, the phone rang, and I heard on the other end, Rita, how would you like to go to India? And I burst into tears. I mean, for God to respond that immediately to an honest prayer, I was speechless. And Mrs. Cowan had just recently lost her eye. Her eye had hemorrhaged, and it was through negligence, actually. But she was such an amazing person. She never sought any recourse. She never sued anyone, nothing, and she needed someone to accompany her on this trip. So she asked me if I would come with her and help her. And so that was in 1974, and it was difficult here. We had to bring our water from Bangalore, and there was only one Indian canteen, and the food was all with chilies. It was very hot. We weren't used to that. Food party was like today, and unbeknownst to us, Swami had asked Mrs. Ratanla to bring us lunch every day, and I'm sure we would have starved if she hadn't. She was so wonderful, and she was so humble. She didn't even tell us that until years later, when I had the chance to thank her for her kindness, and she humbly commented, "Oh, no, Swami asked me to bring lunch, that is why." And Swami was coming to our room one day, but we didn't know it. And Camille Svensson used to come in the early days. She was a Sanskrit scholar, and she came with us on that trip. And I remember looking out the bungalow window, and I thought I saw her fall.
This was in Whitefield,
Bangalore? This was in Puttaparthi.
Puttaparthi.
Okay. And it was in July, and it was hot, and sometimes there wasn't water, and there wasn't electricity, and there was no place to buy food. And Elsie slept on an old broken cot that was half the length of her height. The rest of us slept on the floor. It was rugged in those days. And it was in July, and it was hot. She never complained. In all that time, with her eye having hemorrhaged, Elsie Cowan never complained once. It wasn't until 3 years later that she ever said to me, "Honey, you don't know what pain is." That is what a brave, courageous soul she was. To go through all of that physical hardship, travel to India, and never complain is amazing. So I looked out our bungalow window, and I ran outside to see if Camille was all right. And she had indeed fallen at the Lord's feet. Swami was standing outside our bungalow window. And it took my breath away, and I said, "Oh my God, Swami's outside." So I ran back in, and we all quickly changed clothes, and we quickly made do with the chair, and he came in, and he sat down, and he was like the king. And he sat there, and he asked us questions, and he talked with us, and then he turned, and he looked at me, and he made me this beautiful ring, and he said, "First wedding gift." And I was 19 at the time, and I wasn't looking for a husband. He said, "You know who he is, don't you?" "No, Swami," because I wasn't seeing anyone. I wasn't interested in anyone who wasn't interested in Swami, and there weren't a lot of choices in those days. And he said, "You know who he is, don't you?" I said, "No, Swami." "Yes, you know. Tell me." I said, "Swami." "Yes, you know who he is. Tell me." I said, "Swami." And I just quit arguing, and he sat back in his chair, and he smiled. He said, "I know. It's a secret. And it's sacred." And that was when he gave me the ring. And he started to tell me he's a good man. He works with books. He's a business. He started going into great detail what he was like.
You still didn't figure out?
No, I wasn't seeing. He wasn't even in the picture.
Okay.
He wasn't there yet.
Okay.
So Mrs. Cowan and my mother and myself started the first center in Tustin. And it was just the three of us. And Elsie couldn't even say the word budgeon. She called them budgeons. And she didn't particularly like them, but she was a good sport. So I would sing, and my mother would follow, and Elsie would clap. Or my mother would sing, and I would follow. But then people started to come. And then it was about 1977, Walter and Elsie Cowan had built the youth hostel in Vrindavan. And Swami asked her to come, and Walter had passed on, and asked her to come for the dedication of the youth hostel where President Jati had presided. And so it was at that time we came in April, and that was in Vrindavan. And after the dedication, Swami invited us in for dinner. And he served us the most wonderful dinner. It tasted like food for the gods I've never had. And he kept serving and serving and serving. He never ate. He just kept serving.
He was serving.
Yeah. God himself was serving us. It's like Jesus washing the disciples' feet. He was serving us. And I was so shy. I didn't speak up. I didn't say anything. And Swami sat at the table, and he went around the room, and he asked Julie Miles if she had question, and Walter Neubauer if he had question, Elsie Cowan if she had question. And inside I was praying, oh, Swami, please don't ask me, because I think I'll melt into a pool of butter, because I was so shy. I was afraid to speak up. And to me, he turned and said, you go home and get married immediately. And that night, I did not sleep. Mm. I felt like 1,000 volts of electricity was going through my body. I thought, oh my goodness, what am I going to say? Guess what? You're getting married? I didn't know what to say. We had never even had a conversation. He just volunteered, but Robert volunteered at the book center. I'd been volunteering at the book center. And we never talked. And so we got home and Robert picked us up from the airport, because he took Elsie to the airport, and then he picked her up. And that evening he said, why don't we go and have breakfast in the morning? And so I said, okay, now I have to wait another night to tell him. Oh my God, another sleepless night. And my knees were shaking. And so we went to breakfast the next morning, and we went to Coco's, a little coffee shop behind where the book center was. He said, oh, tell me everything Swami said to you. And I said, everything?
You really want to know?
I said, everything? He said, yes, everything. I want to hear it. I said, okay. Well, Swami told me to get married. She said, oh, that's great. To who? I said, to you. His fork stopped mid-air, never finished that bite. He put his plate down. He said, oh my God, to me? He said, I'm going to go to India right now myself and ask him. I said, I'll be a good wife. So, the long story short, Elsie Cowan performed our marriage ceremony in the temple, there at the bookstore. And we came back 6 months later. Swami called us in. He said, I am going to perform your marriage ceremony. He gave me a beautiful sari. And Marsha Pokot, who lives here, she was there in the wedding. And Tony and Marianne, there was just the five of us and Swami. We gave him a beautiful rose garland, and he garlanded us. And I remember he took the fruit tray, and he took these two grapes, and he plucked it down in our hand. And then he allowed us to give him the grape, the fruit. And I think that was very symbolic. And I think this has been the greatest gift that Swami has given me, because what I've come to realize is that if you can do one relationship the very best that you can, and really be willing to be honest and work on it, you can take that relationship and then you can spread that to every other relationship in your life, and you can find a way to be successful with God's grace.
Mm. Very sage advice. Now, you've been a very obedient girl. Swami made you study and study and study and get so many master's degrees. Didn't you ever question, I'm tired of writing papers and, you know, paying my tuition and working so hard? How many masters do you have?
I have 3.
Hmm. And all at Bhagwan's command?
Yes.
Each one of those 3?
Yes.
Now, the current job that you're in as a counselor in a high school in a very difficult neighborhood, low income, ethnic mix is, and there's a lot of violence, homicide, suicide, teenage pregnancies. There's a lot of issues in your high school. Did you want to continue being there? Did you ever ask Swami?
Every time we came.
What did you ask him?
Oh my God, Swami has always been the gatekeeper for every phase of my life. And I guess that's the one thing I've been very clear about, that I always asked him, because I knew somewhere inside that I might not make the right decision, but he would. And even if I didn't like it, it would be right. And it would, even if it didn't seem right, it would become right if I followed what he told me to do. And I taught for many years and had a teaching credential and was able to also teach Balvikas, which was probably the single most wonderful thing I feel I've ever done. And then Swami one day said, you go back to school and get master's. And I got a master's degree in counseling psychology, and then I studied for my marriage and family license and became a therapist. And after I did that for a number of years, Swami told me to go back to graduate school again and to get a dual master's in counseling psychology and school counseling. And he had always told me he wanted me to be a school psychologist. And upon completion of my master's and my my credentials, because you have to have credentials, not just the master's, in order to work in the school system, he changed his mind and he said, no, school counseling, better, at the last minute.
Rita had three offers. Mm-hmm. She had one offer from a very affluent area nearby, and then she had another offer for the super rich community of Newport Beach. And then she had this other offer that came in from Santa Ana High School, which is in the lowest income bracket. Swami considered all three of them, and he told her, take this one, Anna.
That is the name of the school, is Santa Ana High School. But I'll just say one little story. I was praying to Swami about which job to take. Mm-hmm. And when we were there, he was looking at the brochures, and he took this one, and he threw the other ones on the floor, and he gave me this one.
The Anna.
The Anna. But it was the one, it was the school counseling position, not the ones that I was the best prepared for, the school psychologist. That was what he always told me to do at the last minute. That was the one I felt least prepared for. It was the one that was the most challenging for me. And right before my interview, I remember sitting in my car praying to Swami and chanting the Gayatri. And when I was through, I opened my eyes and the picture on my dashboard, it lit up. There was light all around Swami's. And I said, oh my God, Swami, you want me to go here? And I was the only person that didn't speak Spanish. There were a number of reasons why they wouldn't have hired me.
Because it's a predominantly Hispanic student population.
Yes, and I've been there now going on 14 years. And it was very difficult at first. It was the first time that I honestly can say I had experienced a reverse prejudice. I did not know what prejudice felt like. That was a truly humbling experience for me, and a real eye-opener to me of what that felt like for people.
To be a minority.
Yes, and it was very humbling, and it was so humbling that I knew I couldn't even start my day without prayer to God. Every morning I would come to my office and I would say the Gayatri Mantra, because I knew that was my only saving grace. That was what protected me, not so much from the students and their families, but for so many of the people that I worked with. It was just a different mindset, and I was very different, and they didn't understand me. And it's been an amazing experience, because when I started there, I was not welcome. They tried very hard to get rid of me for a long time, but they couldn't. Swami wanted me there. And every year I would come back.
They didn't know somebody in India like Anna. So
every year,
had watched out.
Every year I would come back and I would say, Swami, now may I leave? Uh-huh. He'd say, no, stay. I like Anna. The children are good. And I have come to see what he means. The children. I love the children. It doesn't matter what their skin color, it doesn't matter what their hair color, and it's many colors these days, what their dress color, there is a beauty and a sweetness and an innocence that is remarkable and honest. And I have noticed that through the years, this school has changed so much, and I know it's because Swami's name is being said there. Just saying his name, it's like in a story. There was a movie years ago called The Never Ending Story, where Bastian had lost his mother and he had to go through all these hardships, and he became a Treyu in that process, which is also one of the Upanishads. And everything fell away and he lost everything, and he finally met the goddess, and she stood before him just like in the Bible. There was a single grain of sand, And he said, I've lost everything, I failed. And she said, no, no, you haven't failed. He said, but all that's left is a grain of sand. She said, just say my name. And when he spoke God's name, all of creation was remanifested and more glorious than before. And I think I have learned what power there is in God's name. And we think we're so small and so helpless. And we are. But God's name through us is everything.
And you speak so highly of the power of God's name. Robert, your wife spoke about the power of the Gayatri Mantra. I understand you've been involved on Bhagwan's instructions to have the Gayatri chanting 108 times every single week for the last 22 years.
Yes, it was when I was a region coordinator, we were contemplating what to do. And Swami had initiated Rita earlier in the Gayatri, and we were just starting to learn about the Gayatri. And we thought it might be nice. It was going through our head. And a couple of times, Swami came across the veranda, and he looked at me and he says, where is your chain? And I could never understand the word chain. What's a chain? I'm still not sure, but I think it's the japa. So,
japa mala.
The japa mala. Uh-huh. And at one time, I mentioned it to him. He said, yes. Because the organization in the U.S. had said, for Westerners, Swami doesn't want you to chant the Gayatri more than 3 times. That's it. No more. And so we were puzzled by that. And then Swami, of course, knew that. And he said, the Gayatri is good. Do. So we started doing.
So every week for 22 years.
Yes, we've chanted 108 Gayatris. And sometimes there was 40 or 50 people. And sometimes there's only 3 to 10. But even if there's one, we go there to the little temple in the book center. There's a small temple there with Swami's picture that he sent. It was taken by Mystery, the fellow from Bangalore. And Swami signed it and sent it to Elsie. And we have a little temple there. And we chant every Friday night.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful to know. Robert and Rita, how has your relationship with Baba changed in light of the Mahasamadhi?
For me, it's fuller. For me, last year we couldn't go because our son-in-law was in the last phase of his expiring. So we were there with family. And God's grace, we were able to chant the Gayatri as he left his body, my wife and I, and my daughters and the grandchildren were chanting the Our Father. So we were surrounding him, chanting these wonderful prayers as he took his last breath. So it was a wonderful occasion for us. When we arrived here, we didn't come last year. We missed it. But when we arrived here in India, we could feel the renewed energy, the renewed vibration in our bodies, and coming into Prashanti and going to Bhajan, it's
beautiful.
It's beautiful. And when you put your head down on that samadhi, it just fills your heart. So for us, for me anyway, Swami he's alive until he's no longer for me and whatever happens, but I feel he's alive now, and I feel him in our life because we're afraid to ask for things or pray for things because they also almost happen immediately.
Yes, yes.
So
that's a recurring theme we hear. You think it happens. It's like Swami's ready to answer anything so fast. You got to think what you're going to ask for. Better be careful.
I remember a story years ago. Sylvie Craxi told me she and her husband Antonio had been through a lot of difficulties. And she said, you know, Rita, I notice when it's all done, it all comes back, the love. It all comes back. It's all there. And I understand now what she was talking about because we've come every year since we've been married and I came before we were married. But what I noticed this time was something very different. As soon as I stepped off the plane, it was like every cell in my body came alive. And as soon as we came into Puttaparthi, the bhajans, I would look where Swami would walk, I would look at his picture. All of a sudden, all that energy that he has poured into all of us, to everything, all these years, All that love, it comes back. He quickens it. He brings it to life. He multiplies it. He feels every cell of your body. He doesn't just give you the thought of Him, the remembrance of Him. He fills every atom in your body with His love. And if we still had His form, we would think that we had to only have His form to have that love. He's showing us that His love is in every cell of our body, and He is quickening that experience and heightening that experience. And His love is filling us. Because He took His form away, we are able to taste His love and know that we can have it, that it's not dependent on an interview or where you sit in darshan or who you know or what you wear or what your place is in the organization or how long you've been here. You can close your eyes and He's there and you feel Him. You feel Him. And if He was here in this form, we would still look to the form for that love, and we're limited by that form. But with that form not being there, He's taken us into the formless state of His pure divine love.
Beautiful. How beautifully you summed it. So this quantum jump in our spiritual growth that you speak of, that has occurred after we have lost our dependence or given up our dependence on the form, has it increased your sense of responsibility towards Him and His message and His mission?
You know, I think I would answer that this way. It's like I was saying, working in the high school. Before, I used to think I was so small, I didn't matter. What could I do? It's like Bastian in the Neverending Story, he said, I'm just a small boy. He didn't believe that saying God's name made him powerful, and that his little part, just his little willingness, meant everything, could change everything. And I think it's made me realize that I matter. And not just because Swami has seen us and married us and given me a beautiful ring, but that we each really matter, and that we play a part in God's plan. We're just like a little flame, but that flame can light many candles. And it goes out and that light stretches out and reaches out, and it matters. We matter. And that no matter how small our part is, it's so important.
Robert, your wife has sounded so enlightened and articulate. Do you concur with what she just said, that each of us matter?
I concur, and my wife shares my feelings very eloquently. I think that each of us, like I remember one time, one of my roommates in the 1976 was Isaac Tigret. Well, this was the period when Swami ignored him for 15 years. And then I remember one time when Isaac had been received by Swami after 15 years. Swami told him, Tigret, you will be a small light in the sea of darkness. And that's what I feel I am, is a small light, but a permanent light, and a light that matters, and a light that illumines at least a little dark area around me, so that my thoughts, words, and deeds, and my behavior matter, and I matter. That's...
And I think just one more thought. Swami has always told us, my life is my message.
Right.
I think one of the greatest gifts that Swami has given me is to show me that He's my father, He's my mother, He's my best friend, He's my counselor. But I didn't believe it, because I didn't think that I mattered. And He has taken the time to show me I matter. You matter so much to me that I will marry you, and I will make sure that it's the right marriage for you, provided you do the work. And not only that, I will make sure you are educated, and that you go to the school that you need to go to.
And get those three masters.
Yes. And not only that, I will guide you to the work that I want you to do. And not only that, it doesn't matter who's against you, because I am for you. It doesn't matter if you're the only one. You just need one. And that not only is His life His message, but as we see Him in His form, we keep thinking His life is His message. We don't realize that we matter, and that He is our life, and that we become His message by being that little light.
Beautiful. What a wonderful perspective. Wow, it takes a lot of spiritual maturity to see things with the clarity that you do, Rita.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
You know, Elsie was the torchbearer for all of us. She really taught all of us about love and about service, and provided the opportunity for us to come to Swami and to know of His love. And, oh, Swami, we're so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you both. It's been so enlightening just to hear you. I could go on and on, maybe another time. There's so much more to learn from you and your experiences, your association. And one thing that just I can't get over is the kind of obedience you both have practiced. Just following everything that Swami said and doing it. I guess that's what it takes to be where you are. What an honor it has been to talk to you, Rita and Robert Dinelli. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to share Swami's love.
Thank you so much.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, on this Aradhana Day, April the 24th, 2014. The time in the ashram right now is 6 minutes past 12 noon. I hope you have enjoyed the conclusion of this very interesting two-part conversation with Robert and Rita Danielli of the United States. In case you have missed part 1 from last week, you can easily access it from our website by going to radiosci.org/tryst. That is T-R-Y-S-T. A long list of interviews will show up, and you can pick Robert and Rita Danielli part 1 from there, and any other interview of your choice, you can download it and listen at your leisure. Meanwhile, as always, we look forward to every single feedback, comment or thought from you, dear brothers and sisters. So please go ahead and share with us what's on your mind today. You can reach us at listener@radiosci.org. Now, as the Aradhana Day celebrations continue throughout the day, you must join us and stay tuned to Radio Sai. And all our special programs in the mandir this evening can be watched on our website, radiosai.org. And you can also listen to the programs. You don't have to watch them if they're music. You can just listen to them by tuning on to Asia Stream. That's where you're listening to Morning Glory right now. And there's another simple mantra you can remember. For this, you do not have to be a Facebook user. You do not require to have a Facebook account. Anyone can remember this small little mantra. It is facebook.com/Radio Sai. facebook.com/Radio Sai. And Radio Sai is one single word. And if you go there, you will have everything laid out for you so beautifully. And as I said, no need to be a Facebook user. It's open to everyone. Now, moving along, it was a few weeks ago that I got to sit across from my fellow Anandpur College alumna, Ms. Lina Bordoloi Barua of Assam, and listen to her family's amazing experiences of divine proximity. And even more valuable was the honesty and the candor with which Lina shared the lessons she and her family have learnt when life dealt some hard blows. The translation of that divine grace into graciousness to embrace life in all its shades is what was the priceless takeaway for me from this conversation. Dear sisters and brothers, today I will play the final part of this two-part interview with Lina. And in case you have missed the first part, you can always catch it at radiosci.org/Sai Students. Sai Students is one word and is plural, ends with an S. A long list again will show up, and there you just pick Lina Bordoloi Barua part 1 and you'll get caught up with what you might have missed from last week. Pardon the fumbling. And right now I'm very pleased to play for you the final part of this two-part Fleeting Moments Lasting Memories interview with Lina Bordoloi Barua of Assam. Here it is for your inspiration. Lina, I'm sure you have many more wonderful experiences to share. I really need you to go down memory lane and ask Swami to remind you. What comes to mind?
During the hostel days, I remember that Swami visited us in 84 once and 1987. 84, we had a beautiful program inside in the college. And I remember staying all night decorating the hostel for Swami to come.
I mean, I can't describe, Didi, you would know what it was, the thrill of Swami about to come and all of us decorating the hostel and rushing about doing our work, wanting to present the best to Swami. In 1987, actually, that is when we had the sports day. And incidentally, it is after this 1987 sports meet that Anantapur was, I think from the next year, Anantapur was introduced in the...
Actually, we set the tradition, Lina. We are forgetting. Don't misrepresent history. Yeah. Anantapur started, pioneered the tradition of sports day. When Swami saw how well we did, it became a regular feature. And then look what it has grown into.
Thanks, Didi, for setting the record straight.
I know.
Yes, we did.
Lest someone mistakes it.
Exactly.
And takes credit for it. It was Anantapur.
Yes, it was. That 1987, that was the sports meet. Yeah. Yes. I remember we'd done a play over there, and this was directed by Dr. Rajeshwari Patel. This was a short play, and I was fortunate enough to enact in that. So that is something that I remember very clearly. And Swami had come, and we had had lunch with Swami. All of us had had lunch with Swami. That was a treasured moment. And I also remember the last interview that we had, where Swami called all of us. I think, Didi, you were also there. Mm-hmm. We were together in that. And I remember him telling us about how to learn to behave outside. He was like a mother telling his daughter when one leaves home, the way the mother advises a daughter. He was exactly playing that role. And he said how to talk to others, how to behave, what to say, what not to say. And also about marriage, how if our parents want it, our first duty is to make our parents happy. And whatever our parents want, and how we need to adjust in the new family, how to look after the in-laws, listen to them, how to play roles of the dutiful daughters. And I want nothing from you. He would always say that, I want nothing from you. Just get a good name for Swami. Just get a good name for yourself. That is all I want. I also remember that I wanted desperately that Swami pierce my ears. I don't know where that came from. So I stopped wearing earrings and my holes closed. And then I think my father asked Swami that, Swami, please, can you, this must have been in 1985. Swami, could you please pierce her ears? And then he called me close. He created two gold earrings and then it was painless, absolutely. He pierced it. And that was one, I mean, wish.
You clever girl. We should all have known. We would have stopped wearing earrings and closed our homes and asked Swami to do. I guess his divine hand was the anesthesia that you don't feel any pain at all. Everybody says that. Whoever has their ears pierced by Swami, they felt no pain whatsoever.
No. I mean, it's the proximity of him and him being Swami.
Well, he says no, that even if you're going through rough times, my grace will act like an anesthetic, that you will go through it and you won't feel it. I guess in this case, his touch was the anesthetic.
Physical anesthetic.
You don't feel anything. Otherwise, something poking your skin, they're so tender, your earlobe.
Yeah.
It should hurt you under normal circumstances.
Yeah.
And you made a big fuss about getting married too, right?
Didi.
Clever girl. Fuss about your earrings, foot conditions. You got attention. So what happened?
Know,
tell us.
I know. I mean, I mean, when you think of it, Swami's...
He pandered to all your tantrums.
Yeah, he did. I'd said that my father passed away in 1989 and mother wanted me, I mean her duties, wanted to complete her duties, and so she wanted me to get married, and I agreed, but I said on one condition, that I want Swami to perform my marriage. So fortunate enough, my future husband then, Manas Barua, he was working in the tea gardens, and my mother got a photograph of his, and we wanted Swami to bless this. And we came, Swami was in Kodai actually, we went to Kodai, me, my sister and Ma, we went to Kodai, showed the photograph, and Swami said, very good. Swami called us and he said, yes, good boy, very good boy. He blessed the photograph. And I said, Nay, Swami, you must perform my marriage. And then Swami told me that, see, your grandmother is so old and you have so many relatives. How will they come? How will they see the wedding? So you get married and Swami tumko promise karta hai. Tumko fir se shadi yahan Swami karayega. Shadi karke
aao. So he told you that he'll perform the wedding again. Once you come getting married in Assam.
He told me that.
Wow.
So I got married on 4th May 1992. And I think 8th May we came to
and your
Vrindavan.
Husband was fine with this idea?
My husband was, I mean, thankfully, I must say, lucky to get Manas as my husband. They were non-devotees, though one of his cousins has been devotees from the 60s. But they came, my mother-in-law came, my cousin sister came, who had been devotees. And they all came, their family, the close family came. And Swami called us to the interview room. And he was like the priest over there. He created Akshata, the rice. And he blessed us, he sprinkled it on us, uttering mantras all the time. Then applied the sindoor, the red vermilion. And it was a proper marriage. He gave me the Mangal Sutra, gave me another Lakshmi necklace. And he blessed my husband also. He gave him a bracelet and a ring. And
what was your husband's reaction? This was also new to him. Yeah. So much of grace all of a sudden. As a person who's so close to you, flashing things out of the nowhere.
Yeah.
How did he react to all this?
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, yes, it was when I had told him earlier about all this, about my locket and all, there was a kind of disbelief. But when he saw this with his own eyes, I mean, he came into the Sai fold totally. And also, my husband's a very, in the sense that values are very important to him and a lot of philosophy. He's much into Deepak Chopra nowadays and Wayne Dyer. In fact, he had gone to this Deepak Chopra conference, and there, one of the speakers there was Wayne Dyer.
Very favorite motivational speaker.
Yes, Dr. Wayne Dyer. Mm. And you know what Dr. Wayne Dyer said, that we are all God, but very few have experienced that they are God. And there is one in India who has had that experience, and that is Sri Satya Sai Baba. And, I mean, I got goose pimples. My husband called up and told me that this is what Dr. Wayne Dyer has said. And I said to myself, like, I was in, you know, I was thinking that why is he going, I mean, here there is Swami, there is everything here. And why is he going across to America? Like, it was a kind of, though I never shared this with him. And then when he called me from there and talked again about Swami, I said that that was a reassurance to me.
And it's funny, Lena, your husband had to go across the seas to America to hear Dr. Wayne Dyer, who I deeply respect and love listening to hear that there is a being in India who knows, who's realized he's God. You and I knew it all along.
Yeah.
How fortunate are we?
Yeah. I think, I mean, Manas is fortunate enough to hear a number of discourses of Swami. And that is what truly attracted him to
Swami's
teachings.
How wonderful.
And because during that interview, Swami had asked him that, Swami, now my daughter is married. I want to leave everything and come to you. And then Swami had told her that...
To your mother?
To my mother. Okay. And that, no, you still have duties. And whatever you do it for Swami. Even if you're rolling a chapati, you roll the chapati and you do it with love. You do it for Swami. Every act of yours, do it for Swami, and there you are with Swami always. So this is one thing that deeply inspired my husband a lot, and he also, I mean, has lived his life according to Swami's
values.
This was
such a great reconfirmation for him.
It was.
Lena, when you had this interview, when your wedding was performed by Bhagwan the second time over in person, did he give you any advice, marriage advice, family?
Yes.
Please share.
Yes. Again, like a mother, he sat me down in front of him and said, now you're married. You must listen to your husband. You have to take their family as yours. You have to be the dutiful daughter. You have to take care of that family also and bring happiness to everybody. Like that is one thing, you know, we were taught that Swami was a master of the universe, but then there was so much of joy. There was so much of laughter around Swami, wasn't there, Didi? Like,
always. You felt so happy. You were bubbling with joy.
Yeah.
You couldn't contain it.
Yeah. I mean, there was discipline, there was duty, there was service, but then there was also this joy, this vibrancy about Swami. And so I think that is what he had told me at that interview, to keep that alive in the family. Love, love, love. I remember that is all he had said. Prem, to give and share. That is it. Sometimes it just happens, you slip and then you kind of see Swami's naughty expression telling you, reminding you of it. Yeah, it's all there. I think as students, that is that special bond that we share with Swami.
Is it challenging to follow that advice, to love always, to be dutiful, to embrace your in-laws family as your own?
Fortunately, for me, I mean, it has been easy. It has been. Where relationships are concerned, I don't know, it's Swami's grace that It's all been beautiful. And that's one advice as a teacher that I give my students is build bridges, not walls. Like when you think others are good, when you reach out to them, you get it back. You know, they reach out in the same way. So you just give and they will give in return. You don't have to worry about that. You just give first and it'll all come back. So that's what I believe in. So that is how it has been with me in life. I've just given love, share, and it has all come back in many folds. And it's just been Swami who has taken me through all this. It's just been that.
Very beautiful. Now, you're a teacher and you teach young adults as an assistant professor at this Rongya College?
Yes.
How are your teaching practices impacted by what you have learned at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet?
The first, as I said, is bridges, not walls. Another thing about Rongya is that the undercurrents of, you know, religious conflicts, undercurrents of it quite a bit. So in my class, I would have like children from all religions there. So that is one thing that I have tried to bring into the class, a very sensitive topic. But then I have tried to bring in through my lessons or just interactions about Swami's teaching of Sarvadharma, that's all one, and that there is only one religion, the religion of love. It's just love, nothing else. And that we are all human beings and we are all searching the same path. The paths may be different. So that I think somewhere I can see the expressions changing. I can see sometimes I see suspicion on their faces, but then I don't know how much it'll impact them in practice. But at least when they listen to something every day, probably, hopefully Swami is there, that change will come to the future generations at least.
Yeah, and instead of joining some militia and junta in Assam,
yeah.
and fighting on side of one religion or the other, they will hopefully focus on the commonality, the values which are common to all faiths.
Yeah.
Assam has seen a lot of political strife.
It has.
And religion does play a huge role in Indian polity, so it's very important that the youngsters, they're more open-minded.
Yeah, and to build that inclusive society that we're looking for, that Swami has taught us about, that is something, because there are a lot of pockets of tribal, you know, who are the less privileged. So to teach that in the class, about inclusion, about them being a part of us, and that we need to extend. So that is something that I have tried, because they are the future after all. Here you are, it's not like Swami tells us, I've been telling them, the end of education is character. It's not a degree, it's about molding you as people. And today it's such an I-centric world out there, like each one is only after what one wants. So the journey from I to we-centric is what is going to make all the difference. That is what is going to bring you happiness, not the I but the we. So that is something I've tried to tell my students. I hope that they take lessons from there. Another thing is respecting parents and love for parents, which
is Swami
has. Yes.
A big deal for us as SAI students, but outside these days, there's such a generation gap. How do they react to your advice?
I asked them, how many of you scolded your mothers today? And, you know, some of them would raise their hands and then share that, yes, I said this. Or also about how sensitive you are as a son to your mother, sensitizing them also to the woman. That Swami has also taught us to give respect to women. So things like that, as they would share, they will open out and then they do speak. And then I tell them, go back and thank your mother for something or how much she has done for you. Maybe when someone talks to them, it comes back to them that yes, mother has, I mean, though she's a homemaker, but there's a lot to do at home. So putting
the
these
most,
ideas.
Thankless job.
It is the most thankless job.
Being a full-time homemaker. And it's so challenging.
It is. I try to give them a glimpse of the woman that their mother is and the respect that they need to give towards her. So we are nothing but, what shall I say, this light is in my hand that's been given to me by Swami and I pass it on. It's through me that Swami is passing the light. That's what
and that's what Swami said, one lamp can light another, and millions of lamps can be lit.
Can be lit.
So that's our prayer as SAI students, isn't
it? Yes,
Swami uses us as a small little light flame and lights
many more. Yeah.
Because He's done so much for us.
Yeah, and that's the least we can do.
Yeah, very true. Lina, your father passed away under very tragic circumstances in a terrible accident.
Yes.
Did you all question, how come with all the blessings, all the grace, why did it end so badly?
No, actually. I mean, he was a rock of the family, not only of our nuclear family, but of the whole Wardloy family. And when he passed, I mean, we broke down. We totally broke down. he was coming back, actually, he was coming back from Puttaparthi. Grandmother and he, they were traveling in the train. And he had just got down to get the maid from the other compartment. And the last thing that he uttered was, "Look after my mother, I'm just coming," he told the co-passengers. None of us were there, he was traveling alone. So, I mean, it happened, and then there was the accident that he made. I mean, when he tried to climb into the running train, he slipped and he fell. That was about 2 hours away from Guwahati, so he was brought in a taxi and he bled on the way and he passed away. So, it was difficult, but Swami was the rock that supported us. Daddy was not there, but then Swami was the bedrock on which the family fell. My grandmother, like, she was, I think, in her 90s then, if I'm not mistaken. She could cope with this, and she never questioned Swami. She wanted to come again to Swami. Like, she did finally manage to come after a few years. In fact, she lost two of her son-in-laws. She lost in the same year as my father. And then a few years later, she lost her youngest daughter.
It's a lot of tragedy.
Lot of tragedy. But throughout, she never questioned. She was.
Did Swami speak to your family on any of these issues?
He called us much later. Later on, he did call us, and I think by then it was beyond the physical, I think, like, I mean, the strength that we got from Swami, whether be it physical or not. Yes, through my sister, yes, he would send vibhuti now and then for us. In fact, I was also not well in between. I had a neural problem, and Swami came to her, gave her vibhuti, and he said, "Tell her everything will be fine. She will be okay." So, he has been with us.
And you became all right?
I became all right. I'm fine now. I'm out of medication. So, he's been there throughout. And, I mean, even in times of darkness, he's been the light. I mean, that's all I can say. Because I think he's given us his vision that, you know, there is a world beyond this, beyond death and disease and failure. I think that is the most important thing. And all this, in fact, these are lessons to learn for you to take that quantum leap. Like Kunti had said that, "Give me more pain.
So I will never forget you.
I will never forget you."
She asked Krishna for that boon, right?
Yes, she did. So these are jewels. They will happen. If it's not death, it's disease, it's in anything. And I think you should welcome them. The more you resist, the more the pain, the more the struggle.
Wow, you're very mature, Lina, very brave and very mature in your thinking.
No, I mean, we've lived it through this. Yeah. So if it's not this, it's the other. Mm. So whatever it is, it'll come, it'll go. It doesn't matter because he's there with you always.
That never changes.
That is the one thing.
One constant in our lives. The only constant.
The only constant, I think.
Very nice. Lina, after such close physical proximity with Bhagwan, so much of guidance, been through, done that all, the Mahasamadhi happened. Did that change anything in your relationship with him?
I miss the physical presence of coming to Swami. Now I do wish that I had come more frequently. I regret. That is one regret, because of his physical presence. I mean, you sit in the front line and there he looks at you and he smiles and he says, "Kab aaya, kaisa hai, kab jayega?" And you miss all that. Yeah. You really miss it.
When did you come? How are you? When are you going back?
Yes.
Just small talk. So beautiful.
Yeah. You miss all that.
Of course.
Or sometimes, you know, we were just in the room and then suddenly Swami's coming and then we'd all rush out and stand there and he'd pass by in the car and give a Abhaya Hasta. So those are things that you miss. But, I mean, I've felt him through, even now I do. I'd like to share, in fact, 24th April 2011, around that time, I was very busy in the college because we had NAC inspection, NAC, the NAC inspection. So that had come.
That comes to evaluate universities.
Yeah. So I was in Dumduma then, in Upper Assam, about 12 hours away from Guwahati. And a number of responsibilities then. And I never imagined that I would be able to come. Like, you know, for a brief, and I kept hearing that, yes, my brother was going immediately. On 24th, he flew. And then I felt so much that I prayed to Swami and I said, "Swami, please," because they had said physically Swami would be kept there. And one last glimpse of Swami, that is what I wanted desperately. But then there was no way that I could leave because the knack was there and I had a lot of responsibilities there. And then, you know, it was Swami's grace that one of the knack peer team was a Sai devotee. And she happened to tell the principal about this, that she is feeling very low. And I heard this. And as soon as I heard this, you know, the thought came to me that what if I tell my principal and ask him at least. He may not give me permission, but let me at least try. So I went to him and it was a miracle. He said, okay, fine, I understand you want to go. Okay, you can go and take his last darshan. So that was a miracle to me, how I came. I mean, I had felt that this was an impossible situation, but when you just pray to Swami, like everything opens out, he makes it easy. Then there have been little things, you know, it's like husband was in the tea, where it was a very, in Hindustan Unilever, tea estates, and then into Hindustan Unilever's. So where you were supposed to, as the spouse, you were supposed to arrange parties and things like that, and big, big parties where there was a lot of responsibilities and everything had to be correct. And that is a time where you would suddenly forget something and then, Swami, please, like it could be oranges for a picnic that you'd forgotten. And I mean, this is something so vivid, it's so silly, but I don't know that I had forgotten to take oranges for this picnic party where some big shots had come from abroad and stuff like that. And I said, Swami, please, oranges. And there was a person cycling there, selling oranges on the way. And it was, I mean, he is there.
He's the God of small things and big things. Yeah, and everything in between, isn't he?
Everything.
I know, I can relate to that too. You're so right. Everyone who comes here echoes the same sentiment. Silly little things also, you know.
Yeah, that he has a time.
Yeah.
He has a time. This happened last year, actually. I think I need to share this. This was one of those days when I was just sitting and thinking, oh, Swami, I miss your physical presence. I miss the touch of your feet. Miss Pad Namaskars. And this thought kept coming to me, you know, I'll never get that again. Never get his Pad Namaskar again. Physical Pad Namaskar. And then the next week, I get a call from Shaila Mahajan.
One of our college ex-students.
Yes, ex-students. We did our graduation together. And she says, Lina, you know, I was watching a CD and there I saw Swami giving you Pad Namaskar. Have you seen that? I said, no, I never even knew that. She's saying, no, she gave me the number and she said, just now I was watching it and I've called you immediately. There is this CD where Swami is giving you Pad Namaskar. You take a look at it. And it was such a thrill to me that...
Just what you thought.
Just what I thought. And like it's recorded. So this was actually, I think, when we'd gone to Kodaikanal to ask for wedding blessings. And that is where taken Pad Namaskar. So, I mean, these are little things that kind of prove to you. We don't need proof. But then the assurance that, yes, I am there. I am there with you. I am there always. So, I mean, Mahasamadhi, no Mahasamadhi. I mean, but he's there with you always. That is something.
Now, Lina, in your profession, you meet people from all walks of life and also as a spouse of a person who works in a multinational company or was working in one. If people ever ask you about Swami or the topic comes up, how do you deal with it? How do you introduce them to Swami?
I generally begin with Swami's projects. I talk about the hospitals, I talk about the education institutes. And then I talk about his infinite love, that these projects are the outcome of his infinite love, his infinite compassion that he has for us. And then talk about him as a source of love. Like if anyone wants to know what is true love, they have to come to Swami. They have to come to Sai Baba.
How do people generally react?
They do. They want to come for bhajans. We have bhajans in our mother's house where we have bhajans every last Saturday. So they want to come for bhajans. They want to know more about Swami. So I also give them these small calendars that I carry. So because they hear about these projects, there is a curiosity to know more about Swami. Know more about him.
And I can make a humble suggestion. If they use the internet, you can introduce them to Radio Sai.
Yes.
They will learn more about him.
Yes.
Now, 41 years of close association with Swami. Today, when you look back, who is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba for you, Lina?
Swami is my anchor. I mean, there is this physical side of him, which is my anchor, my God. I mean, I shut my eyes and I'm in trouble and he is there always to give me the assurance. He is my rock. And there is the other side that I, you know, the first interview that I told you, he told us that you are God. So wanting Swami inside, within me, wanting him there, the easiest way is to say the journey from Swami there outside me to I am, in the sense that I am there that he's there in the stillness inside me, where I can capture him there and keep him there. So there are fleeting moments where he is there always, but I wish I could keep him there always, and I think that would be when my life would be. And I think that is what he wanted us to experience. So I think that is where there are fleeting moments where he is there. But the other is, of course, Swami, the rock, my guide, the reason for everything, of giving everything in life that I've got. And, words fail me.
I like your choice of words, Lina. Those fleeting moments, they do leave lasting memories, don't they?
They do.
And that's why I want to thank you for being on this show called Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Very appropriately worded. And it's been great delight listening to you and to learn of your journey and stories of Bhagwan Baba. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, you just heard the conclusion of this two-part Fleeting Moments interview with Ms. Lina Berdulai Barua, an alumna of the Sai University, and I do hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Please share your thoughts, comments and feedback to this interview by email at listener@radiosai.org. Now, before I play for you the Panchakirtanas from this morning's live concert in the Sai Kulwant Hall, I would like you to take a moment to center yourselves and open your heart to receive this beautiful poem for contemplation. I just stumbled upon this composition called Let's Tune In from an e-journal, Eternal Sanctity, which was an offering from the Pune Sai youth in the aftermath of the Mahasamadhi. So I sought the permission from Ms. Julie Chowdhury, the editor of this e-magazine, Eternal Sanctity, to share this poem with our listeners on Morning Glory. And she informed me that it has been composed by Mr. Sai Mohan Nambiar. I thought it would be very appropriate for our Aradhana Day special episode of Morning Glory, and it goes like this. Let's tune in. Gone is the temporal, a frame that was human, yet divine in full essence. A frame supremely enchanting, who chose to walk his talk, living a life that became his message. Shedding the mortal, as he pulled the curtain down, he chose to become many, from one to many, seeding him into many a heart, from millions to billions to zillions, for today, for tomorrow, and for eternity, to speak from the depth filling the void, a voice void of transitory, a voice valid with God and godly, blossoming every pining heart, raising every deserving soul from the depths unto exalted heights where he dwells, beckoning each one of us unto him, unto the lap of our beloved Sri Satya Sai, unto the lap of eternity. Let's tune in. Unquote. Sai Mohan Nambiar from, I believe, the Sri Satya Sai Books and Publication Trust. With those poems, one by beloved Baba, one by Brother Sai Mohan, and the three interviews, the Aradhana Day exclusive with Mr. K. Chakravarti, the Trist interview with the Danielis, and the fleeting moments with Lina Berdulai Barua, I hope Morning Glory has offered you answers, clarity, and inspiration. Dear listeners, we'll be on the lookout for your feedback to this special episode of Morning Glory at listener@radiosai.org. Now this morning a group of musicians presented the Panchakirtis, a musical extravaganza in the Sai Kulwant Hall. It actually reminded us of the famous Tyagaraja festival from Tamil Nadu. I'm going to leave you to enjoy those songs right now in Morning Glory with a reminder that on Sunday at 6 p.m. please don't forget to be seated very comfortably in front of your computer, logged on to radiosai.org, because Mumbai's mega musical concert for Aradhana Day will be webcast live on Radio Sai. You can also watch it on our homepage radiosai.org or on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Radio Sai. With that, I wish you a great Saisam awesome Aradhana Day ahead. Remember that the only thing Swami wants from us is to always be happy, because happiness is union with God. Up next are Prem and Arvind with Afternoon Satsang. Till they sign in, here's some wonderful music for your enjoyment.
Oh. Pranamami Sai Isha. Pranamami Sai Isha. Sakala Bhuvana Shubha Gana Gana Charita. Pranamami Sai Isha. Sakala Bhuvana Shubha Gana Gana Charita.
Bye. Thank you.